Rewatch Podcast presents the Police Academy Film Series Rewatch. Join us each week as we go from the Academy to Miami to Moscow and revisit every film in the Police Academy franchise. Send your feedback to the Rewatch Podcast at gmail.com. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or follow us on Twitter at rewatchpod. Today we're discussing Police Academy 4, Citizens on Patrol, starring Steve Guttenberg, Michael Winslow, Bubba Smith, George Gaines, David Graff, Leslie Easterbrook, Marion Ramsey, Brian Tochi, Tim Kazurinsky, G.W. Bailey is back, yay! Lance Kinsey, Bobcat Goldthwait, Sharon Stone.
I know.
David Spade.
I know again.
Brian Backer and Tab Thacker, directed by Jim Drake. Welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast. I'm Corey, and don't you ever touch my balls without asking.
This is Nathan, or as us vampires say, lights out, suckers.
I couldn't keep a straight face on that one.
I know. Don't ever touch my balls without asking. I know. How are you, man?
I'm fantastic, mate. How's your week been?
Yeah, it's been good. Been good. Yeah, I've got two episodes left of The Flash. I'm excited about getting to the end of that.
Awesome.
I know. But
it's hard to keep up with your regular viewing when you're watching Police Academy movies every week.
That's exactly right. And the problem is, man, there's so much quality out there. Like there's, you kind of feel like you're missing out on good stuff. You can't keep up with everything, can you?
Definitely not.
Anyway.
We can't keep up with Police Academy, and that's what we're here.
Yes, we're over the halfway point, aren't we? We've hit Police Academy 4.
Yes, definitely over the halfway.
Three more films to go. But before we get too far into our trivia and main discussion, how about we have a listen to the trailer?
Let's do it.
Those talented graduates are back in Police Academy.
I want to welcome all of you to
Citizens on Patrol.
The Police Academy has offered to train you citizens.
You just don't think I'm fat enough anymore, do you?
To better protect yourselves.
Do we get to pack heat?
Attention all cars.
Mahoney.
Gee, I love saying that.
Jones. Hightower. Sweet Chuck. Zed. And Tackleberry.
Good idea.
From now on, by land.
You have the right to remain silent.
Who's gonna save me?
By sea or by air, there's no escaping justice.
Gentlemen, may I see your license and registration, please?
I can blast them out of the sky, sir.
Not yet.
I should give them a warning shot first.
Police Academy 4, Citizens on Patrol.
Now be careful. Because a 44 Magnum has quite a kick.
See it in your neighborhood while you still have one.
All right, we're back.
Yes, let's get into some trivia here.
Yeah, how about you start?
Okay, so we have a release date of April 3rd of 87. Again, 1 year later, we've got another Police Academy movie.
I know, man. They didn't muck around, did they? Like, the first film came out in 1984, and this is it's a film a year.
Yeah, and we were talking last week about how the director of the last two, Jerry Paris, wanted to do 3 and 4 together, but he was actually pretty ill, and he actually did die very shortly after the third film was released.
I do understand it from a logistical perspective, but it's not like they're making Avatar 2 and 3 here. I don't quite understand why they felt the need to shoot two sequels back to back. But
that's true.
I suppose from a budgetary perspective, if they've got all the cast sitting there and it only takes, you know, 2 months to shoot one film, they may as well do another one straight away.
Yeah, but they're still in the ball. Like I said, it's still 1 year after number three. They still got the fourth one out within that year period. So, yeah, not too bad. This film debuted at number one in the U.S. box office, and it would go on to gross $28 million, a bit over $28 million, ranking it at number 44 for the year, which, you know, it's like I said, they've slowly been falling down. $28 million, it's hard to get any info on the budgets of these films, but yeah, I mean, they still made another three after this, so I'm assuming that's still pretty good return.
You know what, though, man, the budget might be more than you think, because to kind of get people like, you know, Steve Guttenberg back and some of the, you know, George Gaines, I mean, I can't imagine they'd come back for nothing. I reckon their salaries would have been a reasonable amount. Like, didn't you mention that in Police Academy 3, wasn't Bobcat Goldthwait and Sweet Chuck's salary like $500,000 or something like that?
Yeah, just a bit over $500,000 each. So
yeah, I know. Yeah. So I mean, that's a lot of money. So if Bobcat Goldthwait, who was not a big star for Police Academy 3, was getting paid that, Guttenberg must be getting paid $2 million, I would expect.
The cast alone has to cost a lot of money, so it's difficult to gauge what's going on here, you know. And like I said, they've still made another three films after this, so it's hard to say what $28 million in return is a good return or not. Maybe, yes.
But yeah, I mean, as you say, it ranked at number 44 at the year's box office in 1987, but it actually faced a lot of stiff competition. And in the previous episodes, we've been kind of going through a bit of a list about what kind of films were coming out at the time, and I mean, this is a reasonable list of films. I mean, there's some good ones and there's some not so good ones, but there's actually a couple more sequels in here which I found interesting, or reimaginings. Like,
yeah, well, 86 wasn't such a good year, but the previous 2 years it had very stiff competition, and 87 they've pumped it back up, and you're right, there is actually some sequels to some big franchises here.
Yeah, and stuff like Beverly Hills Cop 2, The Secret of My Success with Michael J. Fox, The Witches of Eastwick, which is a great film, that's an excellent
Yeah.
Dragnet with Tom Hanks and Dan Aykroyd, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Outrageous Fortune, Mannequin, Roxanne, Blind Date with Bruce Willis, Spaceballs came out in that year, The Adventures in Babysitting, which I don't know anything about, Revenge of the Nerds 2, Nerds in Paradise.
Harry and the Hendersons. You know, that's another one of those ones that I'm not sure how the cinematic release went. I know it's a bit of a cult favorite now, but when it came out, who knows? Inner Space, I'm sure that was a huge release.
Yeah, Inner Space was a huge release. Yeah. And that's a good film. It's actually been 15 years since I've seen that. It'd be interesting to revisit.
Tin Men and another sequel, Ernest Goes to Camp. And Ernest films were doing, you know, they're in the same realm as the Police Academy. You know, they just kept pumping those things out.
Yeah, I always think the Ernest films were always a bit of a joke in some regards, because they made quite a few of them. And I think, what was his name? Jim Varney, is that correct?
Oh, I don't remember. Honestly, I don't even remember the last time I watched an Ernest film. It was probably like 1991 when I was 7 years old or something.
It was probably the kind of thing that you passed by at the video store and didn't really pay too much attention to because it looked a bit rubbish.
But that is some stiff competition. A few more sequels there for some of the bigger franchises. So,
and the film did okay. I wouldn't say it went gangbusters, though. You're dead right. This is definitely the start of the decline, the slow decline.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, so another good bit of trivia here. Bobcat Goldthwait and Tim Kazurinsky, that's of course Zed and Sweet Chuck, they were brought on board to this film actually last minute to replace Bruce Mahler, who plays Fackler. He dropped out from the film due to negotiations falling apart over his pay, of all things. So they were just like, I don't know, I guess we can just throw another $600,000 at Bobcat Goldthwait and he'll come back. And you would never pick it.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't exactly call Fackler like a really important part of the previous two or three films. I mean, don't get me wrong, he had a couple of moments here and there, but he certainly wasn't a key ingredient to the success of the Police Academy film. So
we even said for the last one, he came back for that one scene because really the focus was on his wife who was going to the academy, and they had that one scene with the role reversal and that was it. So I don't know what he was expecting to get paid for Police Academy 4, but
even though he dropped out, I was pretty pleased to see Bobcat and Tim Kazurinsky back. Oh,
definitely. Yeah, so like I said, I thought they were a highlight. The two of them teamed together was fantastic.
Another bit of trivia is that this was David Spade's first film role. According to Steve Guttenberg's biography, The Guttenberg Bible.
Love it.
Oh my God, I didn't even know that existed. That's hilarious. Guttenberg apparently took Spade under his wing during the shooting of this movie, which took place in Toronto, Canada.
Yeah, I got some things to say about David Spade in this movie. We'll get to it.
We'll get to it. Skateboarding legend Tony Hawk appears as one of Arnie and Kyle's skateboard buddies.
Yeah.
And it actually, I found it pretty interesting because my recollection of Police Academy 4, and I've got a pretty clear recollection of it, because when it came out in 1986, I believe it was, 1987, sorry, my mistake, I've got really big memories of the skateboarding scene in it and being right into skateboarding at the time. And I remember it was the Bones Brigade, or Steve Caballero, Tony Hawk, and I can't remember the rest of their names, but I remember being quite interested in this film simply because of their involvement, and I knew they were in it. So it was kind of one of those kind of reasonably kind of notorious films for me as a teenager.
Oh yeah, the Bones Brigade being in this film is an obvious grab at the younger audience, and that's the only reason they're there. You know, they come into the film, they do some skateboarding stunts, and then they just disappear from the movie. It's
yeah,
pretty funny, actually. But yeah, Tony Hawk actually said that this was the only job he ever got fired from. You know, most of the stunt doubles were from, of course, the Bones Brigade, because of their manager. He was the former pro skater, Stacy Peralta. And he also worked as a second unit director. And as it turns out, that Hawk was replaced as a stunt double for David Spade because he was too tall. So he ended up getting fired. And he said, yeah, that's the only job he's ever been fired from.
Apparently, Stacy Peralta was actually a very clever filmmaker in his own right. Yes, he was a skateboarder and he was heavily involved, but he actually made a movie a couple of years ago that I actually haven't seen, but I've got a really big interest in. It was called Crips and Bloods, Made in America, and it's a first-person look at the notorious gangs growing up in South Los Angeles and the devastating gang violence and whatnot. And apparently, it's an excellent documentary, like really top notch, like as good as it gets kind of filmmaking. There's a podcaster that I listen to called Moulton on Movies, and Leonard Moulton talks about this documentary as being like a really excellent film. So if you're after something a bit unique and different, I try and seek that one out.
It's a good call. I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, he's a very good filmmaker. He was involved with Dogtown and the Z-Boys, and he's been involved with like various kind of other things for a long time.
Well, another trivia here. Like I said, Sharon Stone's in this movie?
I know.
But she says it's actually due to the collapse of her first marriage. It's the reason why she came on here. And she wanted to actually get out and have some fun. She was going through a difficult period. And she is quoted as saying, hanging out with a gang of comedians, it was the best therapy.
Wow.
I think she's coming up with any reason why she was in Police Academy 4.
I had no idea she was in this until, I think we mentioned it a few films ago. Didn't I kind of do a bit of a spoiler alert, like in one of the early episodes, like, doesn't Sharon Stone show up in one of them? And here she is, and, you know, we'll get it more into it in the main discussion, but truthfully, she's reasonably forgettable in this film.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true.
Anyway, we'll kind of get to that. And this is a bit sad from my perspective. This is the last time we see Mahoney, Nagata, Copeland, Sweetchuck, and Zed. Apparently, Tim Kazurinsky, actually, or Sweetchuck, I should say, he does have a guest appearance on Police Academy, the series, which was made in 1997 as a janitor. So he does come back for a small guest appearance. But we kind of lose some of the better characters, truthfully, in this film. It's going to be interesting when we get to Police Academy 5 and see what that's kind of like. Should we just get into our main discussion?
All right, so Police Academy 4. It opens up with a song called Citizens on Patrol. And we got Jones and Mahoney, like, cruising the streets in their SWAT car.
Yeah.
There's this song, and it seems that, like, Michael Winslow must have, like, been a part of the recording of this song. I don't know.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, they're there, and they're, like, doing a bit of a dance, and it's the Citizens on Patrol song.
Citizens on Patrol.
Citizens on Patrol. And then, yeah, and then Michael Winslow comes in.
Yeah.
And he starts doing this, whoa, 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 whoa. It's so weird.
Yeah, I know.
Why would they be dancing to this?
Yeah, I don't know.
As well, you know, with it, it's like a breaking the fourth wall thing. I don't know. I thought it was weird. But anyway.
Yeah.
They get into it because they arrive at the police academy, and immediately they run off the road by one of Commandant Lassard's golf balls.
Yes.
Because he's called them to the academy to initiate his new program, COP, Citizens on Patrol.
Because in all of the decades history of the academy, the only people Lassard can call on is Mahoney and Winslow and the gang. These are the best. This is the best of the bunch, isn't it? The best.
Exactly. Yeah. Because they've shown up and he's called them all together.
Don't you have that scene where Lasard is talking to Mahoney, Hightower, Jones, Tackleberry, Zed, and Sweet Chuck? And isn't he like practicing his golf swing like in the office? And he keeps hitting like golf balls around the office and they keep hitting, like, doesn't it hit Zed in the mouth or something like that?
Yeah, that's right. Hooks and Callahan are there as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Can't forget Hooks and Callahan. But yeah, and he lays out this thing, Citizens on Patrol, and it's like Neighborhood Watch, but like you actually train the citizens to better prevent crime.
Yeah, it's basically like involving the citizens so like you have a better relationship with them, so they kind of get involved with law enforcement and whatnot.
Yeah, and then they end with this gag where Zed comes in late and you think the golf ball is going to hit him in the head, but instead he eats it or something, or it goes into his mouth and he spits it out. It was a weird gag.
Which apparently they filmed in reverse, so just to kind of get that gag in there. But yeah, man, I thought that whole scene was a bit odd, and they're, like the whole crew were doing their best to like play it straight, but I'm not too sure if it really worked, truthfully.
Yeah, it was a bit bizarre. But then we pretty much get like straight into it. It's all about putting out the word, because actually Commandant Lasard can't be involved in COP because, as we know, George Gaines just does drop-ins for these films.
And all he does is take care of his goldfish.
Yeah, and he's going to go to London to talk to like other police commissioners about it. So that's why he's not around, and the gang has to initiate the COP program.
Because later on in the film, you have this really weird sequence, and you totally forget that Lasard actually goes to London. Mm. And you have this sequence where it suddenly goes, meanwhile, in London. I'm like, what's going on here? Why
are we in London? Yeah.
Why is Nagata and Lasard in London? Yeah, anyway.
But they get straight into it. They're getting out the word. And they are going to visit the various kooky characters who are going to come to the academy, because, you know, we can't do, you know, our group of police officers now training more recruits. We did that in the last film. So this time it's citizens are going to come into the academy and we're going to train them.
I know.
It's so, not the same story.
No. So we have the skateboarding delinquents who we meet very early in the film with the Bones Brigade and whatnot, which is Kyle and Arnie. Kyle is played by the one and only David Spade, and Arnie's got a name, Brian Backer, who did look very familiar to me, but I wasn't really too sure where I had seen him before.
He is in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Oh, okay.
That's the only other place I know I've seen him. I may have seen him in something else, but yeah, that's where I've seen him before.
Yeah, well, since Police Academy 4 in 87, he's only appeared in a few things, so I'm not really too sure what he's been up to.
But David Spade, right?
Yeah.
Is it just me, or does he sound exactly the same as he does today? He's the exact same. He's all of what, like 17 in this movie?
Because he looks really young. But you know what, man? The man doesn't age. He was born in 1964 and this was made in 1986, so he was 22 at the time.
Right, okay. But still, he sounds exactly the same. We're talking 30 years ago.
Yeah, I know.
And he has the exact same voice. It's crazy.
And exactly the same acting style. I mean, I'm not a hater. Like, he's okay. He's
oh, like, yeah, don't get me wrong. He's funny. He shows up in Adam Sandler movies here and there. He did Just Shoot Me. That was a great show.
To be fair, he's pretty consistent. I don't think he's ever really presented himself as the world's best actor, you know, like that does like really kind of meaningful dramatic turns and then does a really funny comedy film. In fact, I couldn't even tell you if David Spade has made a drama or a thriller. They're all goofball comedies.
Hey, Arnie, where are you going?
Home. Look, Kyle, I got a boatload of stuff to do. I got a term paper due tomorrow and a history test. I got to help my father clean the cellar. And I have to do the dishes tonight.
What are you doing? I'm going to get the guys and hang out at the mall.
Let's go.
Hey, Arnie, Kyle. Thought I told you guys no skateboarding in my district.
This isn't skateboarding, Sergeant. This is carrying skateboard. This is skateboarding.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they're set up, you know, they are skateboarders, naturally. This is where Tony Hawk and all them show up. And that's what I mean. It's so weird is that they go out skateboarding and then all these guys show up and they're all skateboarding together and they were warned not to by Copeland, of all people.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
And then they get to the mall where they were going and all the other skateboarders just disappear and they're like, see you later, guys. Never to be seen again.
And you never see them again for the rest of the film. And they kind of come across as if they're all mates, yeah?
Exactly. So, I don't know, whatever. But, you know, then Kyle and Arnie end up getting chased by Harris. Harris is back. Yay!
And isn't there like a scene where Kyle and Arnie go to court and doesn't the judge kind of like throw the book at them a little bit and sort of say, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Conform to society.
Yeah, that's
yeah. But Mahoney steps in and says, hey, you know, we're initiating the Citizens on Patrol program. How about throw them in there as a form of alternative sentencing? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and it also sets up Harris. Of course, Harris is completely against the COP program. He doesn't want anything to do with it. He doesn't want any of them around his precinct because he's got his own precinct now. And Proctor's his offsider. So Proctor's jump ship from Mouse to Harris.
I never really quite worked out why Harris would give up his plum precinct job, which he looked like he had a pretty cushy with Proctor as the ridiculous sidekick. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you, Corey. He's probably my least favorite character in the whole series. I don't really find him very funny. I never found him in any of his scenes. I've never really found him very funny. What do you think?
Yeah, no, he's all right. But you're right. He doesn't really add anything, I think, really. He does a bit in this movie, which I found a bit humorous here or there, but that's about it.
He's so silly. He's so silly. But yeah, Harris gives up his gig, and doesn't he get into the ear of the Lassard's boss and sort of tells him like all of the problems that are kind of going to come from the COP program, and that kind of leads Harris to kind of getting his old job back, looking over Lassard's academy.
The commissioner is the worst, right?
Yeah.
In the second one, we were talking about like how weird it was that the commissioner told Mauser that like, you know, Captain Lassard could screw up, and if he does, then you get his job as captain. And we're like, well, what did you expect Mauser to do?
Yeah.
Here, Harris actually, like, the commissioner comes to see Harris, and Harris is like, this is a dumb idea. Why are we doing this? Cops will lose their jobs if we start training civilians in cops work.
Yeah.
And the commissioner's just like, the governor likes it, so we like it. And then the commissioner puts Harris in charge while Lassard's away in London. And you're like, what? Why?
Yeah, I know.
He obviously said he didn't like the program. You are the worst, Commissioner Hurst.
I know. So... Exactly right. So Harris gets reinstated back to Lassard's Academy, and he shows up, and they all kind of realize that it's all going to go terribly pear-shaped as soon as kind of Harris shows up. And like, as much as we were kind of lamenting G.W. Bailey's departure from the series, like, I wasn't entirely convinced by Art Matrano in episode 2 and 3. I'm not too sure Harris does a much better job in this one. He's almost like a caricature of the first character he played in the first film, if you know what I mean. Like, he's still good, but he's just not quite as funny. And to be fair, I don't think the material that he has to work with is quite as good as the first film.
Yeah, he's just doing that same film over again. You know, just the gags, though. You know, just the highlights. You know, he's not doing any of that great stuff he did in the first one, really.
Yes.
Just playing his greatest hits, as it were.
Exactly. So we've got Kyle and Arnie, who is David Spade and Brian Becker. We've also got Tommy House Conklin, who's played by Tab Thacker, who's a pretty major part in this film. When I say major, like, he's certainly there or thereabouts, isn't he? But the other character that is really prominent is Tackleberry's new partner, who is this older woman played by the great actress Billie Bird, who has been in a lot of films. She plays Lois Feldman.
Yeah, Mrs. Feldman. She is great.
She's pretty good, isn't she?
I loved her introduction. You know, we see her briefly in, you know, the town hall meeting that they're having, you know, when Kyle and Arnie sort of bust in and get arrested. But Tackleberry and Callahan go to see her at a retirement home, and she's like decked her whole little apartment out in like army style, and Tackleberry loves it, and she's totally on board for being trained as a cop and getting out there. This little old woman is so funny. You know, another gag, I didn't even realize it until watching it this time. It is the most random little thing, but Tackleberry and Callahan show up in a cop car, right? They drive there and they get out of the car. And for some reason, Tackleberry is carrying his helmet, because we know he does bike patrol, right? And I'm like, why is he carrying that helmet if they drove there? They got out of the car and he was carrying it. Oh, wow. And it's like, it was almost as if to say, like, you know, it's part of his persona. Like he he walks around with his police helmet off under his arm like that. Like, so when he presents himself. His thing or something.
I've never really noticed that, but you're right. I'm going to
keep... It's so weird, but I can't imagine they didn't do it intentionally. They just kind of threw it in there. And like I said, I must have seen... Like, I've seen this movie so many times, only noticed it this first time. And I'm like, that's so random.
But once again, we kind of come back to, the, like, Tackleberry and this new character, Lois Feldman. And you're right. Like, he shows up at her apartment and is totally decked out in kind of, like, guerrilla warfare. And there are guns everywhere. And it's camouflage everywhere. And you're right. Tackleberry's eyes pop out of his head, don't they? Like he really... He just loves it. He thinks it's the best thing ever. It's like, nice digs, Mrs. Feldman.
Excuse me, sir. We're looking for a Mrs. Feldman. Do you know her?
Yes.
Excuse me, ma'am. Do you know a Mrs. Lois...
Where can we find Lois Feldman, please? Thank you.
Mrs. Feldman?
Who's asking?
Police.
Is it about those damn library books?
We're following up on your alleged interest in the Citizens on Patrol program.
Oh, then I'm Mrs. Feldman. Come on in.
Callahan, cover your rear. I admire your taste, Mrs. Feldman.
Yes, well, I do all my own decorating.
You have a talent for it, ma'am.
I'll be with you in a moment, Sarge.
Perhaps you'd like to discuss the program first, ma'am.
What's to discuss? Think I want to hang out here and listen to arteries hardening? Now, where'd I put that bulletproof vest?
Yeah, so we're pretty much drawing this group together. You know, Harris starts to tell them about, you know, how he doesn't think this is going to work and all that, of course. I love he's reading a pre-prepared speech that Lasard made.
Yeah.
And he's reading it like, you will be trained in many, many, many fine police arts and have many, many, many great experiences. And he's just looking at it like... Eventually just tears it up and throws it away.
They actually carry on with that gag a little bit towards, like, I think there's a halfway through the film, there's a sign that says, welcome to the Captain Lasard's Police Academy, and where there are many, 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 many great such and such.
Yeah, and then, have a very, very, very nice day.
That's exactly right. It's very funny. It's quite good.
So, of course, Harris isn't in on it, but, you know, all the trainers are going to do their best to make sure it works. So, you know, Mahoney comes in and he does his usual, you know, this is Lasard's Academy, Harris. Mahoney really does, like, nothing in this movie.
You know what, though? I don't think he's quite as offensive as a character as he has been in previous film. Like, in this film, he's not, like, just totally chasing any girl he can kind of get. Like, he's a bit creepy in the previous films. This one, you're right, he's just nothing. He doesn't really do anything apart from be Mahoney and Steve Guttenberg and take the paycheck. I don't think he does a bad job, but...
No. Yeah. But he just does nothing. And then Sharon Stone is there as a reporter.
Yeah.
And you're like... Why is she there? She's there to play off Mahoney, but Mahoney's not doing anything. So what in the hell's Sharon Stone doing? They actually had a scene that developed the two of them further. Like, they go out on, like, sort of a date, and she invites him back to her place. They cut the whole thing. And I'm like, I'm not surprised because Mahoney is so boring and nobody cares.
this is what you watched today and the special features? Because I actually didn't see the deleted scenes. I should have watched them. I was going to, but it didn't get there.
Yeah, I didn't even watch the whole thing of that.
Wow. Like
I found that it was the deleted scene and then they started in and she's inviting him into her house. And I'm like, I just don't care. I'm going to turn this off. This is, I understand it's on the special features and thank you for letting me know that the scene was a part of the movie, but fuck it. I'm turning it off.
That's right. So as we kind of said before, Harris, along with his right-hand man Proctor, are put in charge of the academy and Harris immediately plots to make the COP volunteers quit and leave the police work to the officers. He actually says something early in the film where he says, the concept of citizens doing police work is asinine, and he's absolutely determined to see the COP program fail and take over Lassard's job at the academy. It's always his ultimate kind of goal, isn't it, is to get rid of Lassard and kind of take over the facility. I mean, can you imagine a Commandant Harris kind of thing? It'd be kind of funny, to be honest with you.
It would, you know, because he's always, like, he just really doesn't want anybody to have any fun all the time.
I know.
And it gets him in the most ridiculous circumstances. You know, it even kicks off at the beginning where he's, like, talking down Mahoney and he just walks into the showers. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
It's a random thing to happen, but whatever.
But for someone who's so driven by success and kind of wants to kind of get to the top, why does he keep Proctor around? I just don't get it, because the man's a, like, he's a fool, but I suppose he kind of does his bidding, doesn't he? Like, if Harris needs something to be done, Proctor will just do it straight away.
A party? Why wasn't I told?
Honey.
Hey, Callahan. Hey, Hooks.
Attention, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I'd like to thank you all for coming.
Hey! Let's party!
Yeah!
Excuse me.
All police officers out of the pool! Parker!
Let's go! Out! Everybody out!
Sir, why don't you just let everyone enjoy themselves?
Why don't you just kiss my rosy red ass?
Rosie.
Get out of that!
Oh, no!
Just look at yourself. You are a disgrace to the uniform. Go get changed. Move it.
Exactly, yeah. But yeah, Proctor's just so dim-witted. But
don't we even see Copeland and that, like, early in the film? But they don't show up again, do they? They're in there just for a minute or two, don't we?
Yeah, pretty much. It was just the chase with Kyle and Arnie. So
once again, Police Academy's kind of decided to shift out some of the main characters that we kind of know a little bit and actually continually introduce new characters that we don't really know all that well.
At the same time, Zed's back.
Zed is back. And as usual, he's hilarious.
He really is. Because he's the one who really kind of butts heads with Harris. You know, as much as Mahoney butts heads with Harris, in this one, they kind of focus on Zed sort of copying it from Harris. And it's actually pretty funny. But, you know, there's this whole thing where they send Zed out trying to, you know, get support for the COP program. Right. He ends up at this women's poetry
day, that's it, yeah.
And the woman there, she ends up becoming his love interest because she volunteers.
She looked really familiar to me. She was an actress named Corinne Bora. She looked really, really familiar. And I tried to work out where she was kind of from and I couldn't quite work out where, but I must have seen her on TV or something like that.
She's got a very 80s look to her, though. So.
Oh, very much so. But she looked really, really familiar to me. I'm sure I've seen her in a few things, but that's okay.
But, you know, I thought that was a great scene with Zed at the poetry reading. And then
I thought she was kind of good, actually. I thought that whole kind of love interest thing, like, as much as it was kind of ridiculous, it was kind of nice to see something more interesting happened to Zed.
Yeah, and she was a bit of a cliche, you know, like a hot librarian or something that. Yeah. And she's taking photos all the time for some reason. I don't know. Yeah, she was all right. And it was good to have like a bit of a progression for Zed, who, like we mentioned, was brought on like really late to this film. So they wrote this whole arc for his character in this at very late notice.
Is Hightower and Jones in this film just for like window dressing? Because they give Hightower nothing to do. The last couple of films, they've given him nothing to do.
Yeah, pretty much. We get to a scene where
I'm assuming
Kyle and Arnie and House all think that they are like total badasses now.
Oh, yeah.
And then they can go out.
Yeah, so don't they say, like, we're ready, man. When are we going to go out? We're ready for this, man. We've been training for ages.
We should be vigilantes.
Yeah, that's right. And doesn't Jones and Mahoney and Hightower all collude to kind of create like a bit of a ruse, but the kids don't necessarily know what's going on, and they get them up in the middle of the night and go, right, you're ready, we've got to go out to like a job, and they put them in the back of a paddy wagon and they show up at this like fight scene, or I don't know, it's like a crime scene, I should say, in the middle of the night, and Mahoney and Jones will take these kids along and go, right, you know, if you come across the perp, then just stop him and get him to do whatever, and they go, yeah, but what about the guns, man? Don't we need guns? And he goes, you shouldn't need them. They shouldn't have guns. And then Mahoney looks at Jones really smirkily and looks back to the camera and kind of goes, okay.
Yeah, but they set up a gunfight.
Yeah.
And then bring out Hightower disguised as this dude they call Badula and his dead brother that they've just killed.
I know.
Throw the kids with Hightower and the dead body in the back, and then Hightower does this whole bit where he's doing voodoo magic.
I know.
And the body comes to life, and
it's Tackleberry.
With a chainsaw. And the kids just run away.
Oh my god.
It was actually a good bit, you know, but you're right. That's pretty much all they get for Hightower in this movie.
It's a shame, though, because I mean, I think it's something that this series really lacks a little bit. As much as I like the gags, man, and trust me, I do. Like, I'm not a hater on these films at all. Like, but you don't get to know any of the characters. It'd be nice to kind of learn a little bit more about Hightower or Jones or Hooks. I've said this before, man, in previous episodes, but they really ignore the character development, and it's just all about the gags all the time.
At least we're sort of getting a bit of development for Zed, which, like I said, is very unusual considering that Bobcat was brought on so late. And he's the one who's butting heads with Harris. So, you know, after Harris has this whole bit, like Zed's sort of getting romantically involved with this woman, Laura.
Yeah.
I mean, he has a whole great bit about his Mickey Mouse watch that stopped working. He says it's like a family heirloom. It was the last thing I stole before becoming a cop.
That's right.
And Harris kind of comes in, you know, with his loudspeaker as he does.
Move it.
So Zed swaps out his deodorant with Mace.
I know.
Harris comes into this class that Zed's teaching. It's the proper way to eat a donut. And he's got his arms propped up in these casts. It's so funny.
And doesn't he say something like, the next person to misplace their can of mace is going to get going to go and report and find, or something like that. And he's got his arms elevated and he can't put them down.
Yeah, he struggles to get back out the door. He has to go like sideways and do this weird walk.
And of course, Lieutenant Proctor, or whatever his name is in tow as well, which is quite funny.
Mm-hmm. And they also get them on the Blue Oyster Bar this time. We get the gag again.
Speaking of, you know, the fact that we don't see Copeland or Mahoney or Zed or Sweet Chuck again, this is the last time we'll see the Blue Oyster Bar. I'm sorry to disappoint you, everyone out there. And from what I understand, a bit of spoiler alert for Blitz Academy 5, but yeah, it was the last time we go there. And you know what?
It's run its course, really.
The people that they send in too is Proctor and Harris. And I'm sure Proctor went there in the last film.
Yeah, so why doesn't he know?
Because I can't even remember how they end up there. Don't they go out in the middle of the night and they're trying to find someone, and Harris goes, oh, I really hope this is the address. And Proctor says, yeah, this is meant to be the fine kind of eating establishment.
Yeah, like the best salad bar in town or something. That's what Mahoney tells me. And I was like, yeah, okay. It's still kind of funny, but you're right. It's run its course. It was almost as if it was a secondary thought where they were like, oh, we didn't do the Blue Oyster gag. Well, let's just have Proctor and Harris show up there.
Yeah, yeah.
After Mahoney told them that it was a great salad bar, and we'll just play the scene out and put it in the movie. It has. It's run its course.
Yeah. So despite the pranks played upon Harris during the various training exercises the volunteers take, Harris is still determined to make the COP program fail. And look, we're calling it Citizens on Patrol, but there's a big gag throughout the whole thing where they're always calling it COP, aren't they? So, like, aren't they all wearing T-shirts with, like, COP on there, and George Gaines is on there pointing his finger at you saying, we want you, kind of thing, you know? And for some reason, they're convinced, or George Gaines or Commandant Lasard is determined that it's going to be, like, this really popular thing all throughout the world, isn't he?
Exactly, yeah, because we do cut to that scene of Lasard in London, and there's all these representatives from other law enforcement from around the world. And they do this gag of, like, he's been teaching them English, so they all speak like he does. And they've all got goldfish. And you know, for some reason, Nagata's there.
Why is Nagata there?
But the thing is that Lasard comes back to the academy, and Nagata comes with him, and he sort of gets his moment with Callahan as well.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, it's the only time they get back together as well, because they got back together. Well, they started seeing each other in the third one, which is always a bit of a strange pairing. And in usual Callahan style, they have a very angry kind of love scene a little bit, don't they?
Yeah, she repeats the line again.
But isn't it a gag though when Nagata jumps onto Callahan and says, oh, you know, I've missed you so much, and then doesn't Callahan jump up, and aren't they in some class or something like that?
Yeah. And immediately the COP program fails because
Mrs. Feldman is behind
everybody
this.
In. She thinks there's all these people selling stolen goods, and all these, you know, they come in, they bust in, and it ends up being an undercover sting. 3 months of police work out the window. So COP program is shut down.
It's shut down, and, you know, Harris has a big go at them the next day and says that, you know, that they're in big trouble. All this kind of work has kind of got out the window, and it's your fault, and you should never have been out there in the first place, and this is a disaster, and that there's going to be an inquest and a report into this and all that kind of stuff, isn't there?
Exactly. So, you know, all these delegates are back in the US, and they're sort of getting a tour around the station. And of course, Harris comes in with his big grin and says, oh, well, unfortunately, we've had to shut the program down, you know, in front of all these world delegates and stuff.
And this is, I was talking about how much I dislike Proctor. Well, I really dislike Proctor in this film, because as the delegates are getting touring around the station, he walks into, like, the jail, and all the inmates are playing this game.
Simon Says.
I know. And they somehow kind of coerce Proctor into getting involved in the game itself and disarm him of his gun straight away, and then force him to kind of switch places with all of the inmates. And then out of nowhere, without any real warning, there's a jailbreak, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. We did skip over it too, but they did, like, he was sort of having a go at everybody. He says they were goofing off,
yes,
playing basketball, but it was like citizen relations, really. And he's like, I'm going to go on telling you.
Doesn't he say, I know what goofing off is, because I'm the king of goofing off, or something like that. I know all about slacking off.
So he goes into a portaloo, and they have a crane.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Put it into a stadium full of football fans during a game, and he has to stand up for the anthem. And you're like, seriously? Like, it's not that funny. It was all right, I guess. But yeah, not that funny.
Somehow Mahoney kind of convinced all the people involved to kind of do this as well.
Yeah. And
isn't he, like, sitting inside the toilet reading, like, an Archie comic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, he gets a bit of the rattle from, you know, being lifted up by a crane, and he just thinks it's somebody else trying to come in, and you're like, what? Like, can police officers actually force crane operators to get involved in this? Like, and they latch it on the top on like just a flimsy bit of plastic, you know, it's got this loop on the top, and I'm like, what's to stop that from breaking and killing the guy? Like, it actually seems like a pretty dangerous prank to be pulling on somebody right now.
And they put him into the middle of a football game, and I actually, on the special features, there was a bit of a behind the scenes thing on it. The guy who played Lieutenant Proctor, Lance Kinsey, that's his name, apparently it was before an actual football game. It was before one of the Rose Bowls in 1986 or something like that, and it was just before the game started, and they filmed the scene in front of everyone, and they had like 7 or 8 cameras on him just because they had one shot to get this scene, and they did it, and he was nervous as hell, and he looked like a fool, but he did it, and he got the shot, and that was kind of that.
There is one shot, which I think is glaring, and when I saw it, I was like, oh, how did you not see that? And I'm not sure I've seen it before, but it's an actual shot of as the toilet comes down, the crane is dropping it onto the football field, and Jones comes up and he takes all the pins out of the side so they can lift it off.
Yeah.
There is a tree right behind him.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, okay, so they obviously shot that like in a park or something like that where there was grass. Either that or there's a tree right in the middle of this football field.
Oh, my Lord.
So, yeah, go back and watch that again.
Yeah, I will. I'll check it out. You'll
get that one shot of Jones where there's this tree right there, and you're just like, ooh, yeah.
You've
got that in the shot.
I actually even noticed earlier on in the film when I think they do a gag with Sweet Chuck when he's sitting on the end of like a bench in like some kind of gymnasium. And, you know, he's actually a character that we haven't talked about too much in this film. And like, Zed is hilarious, but you know what? Sweet Chuck is just as funny. I think he plays it so spot on. Like, he's so not confident with a gun, and he so clearly shouldn't be a police officer, but he does. He plays it for laughs, and it's pretty funny. And there's a scene where he's sitting on the end of a bench in a gymnasium, and the new character, I think they call him House, because he's kind of like walking in and he's kind of singing along to the song, whatever it is, and he doesn't realize what's happening. And he sits at the end of the bench and he shoots her up in the air. But as he sits down on the bench, you can clearly see being like shot up in the air by some kind of device under his seat. And it's not a very good special effect.
Yeah, they do it again when Sweet Chuck's up on the rope.
Yeah.
And Zed he gets hit in the head with a shoe or something, and then he swings him around and he lands in the basketball hoop there as well. And you're like,
Is it fair to say too that Jones's shtick with his sound effects is getting a bit old by the fourth film as well?
Yeah. I don't know. They set it up too because they're like, oh, we're gonna do this training thing, and then oh no cassette. So he starts doing the thing. Like, okay, this sounds nothing like a song. I understand, like, he's really good at doing his sound effects and stuff, but that sounds nothing like any kind of song I've ever heard ever.
And Callahan's
just like, wow, great song, yeah. Slow jog.
I know. And then I think because they're desperate to try and find something for everyone to do in this film. And I think they struggle with it a little bit. They should have, truthfully, man, they should have reduced the characters down in this film a little bit, focused on the ones that we knew, give them all a little bit more to actually do and actually get to know them a little bit more. And I do think this film would have been considerably better.
There was a good gag with Mrs. Feldman, actually, where Sweet Chuck's trying to teach them like what to do with a whistle in the case of being robbed.
Oh, yes.
And Mrs. Feldman, like, just beats the shit out of
him. Totally beats him up, doesn't he?
While he's trying to be Mr. Personager.
And doesn't, like, Zed and Jones have to come over and, like, pull her off the
Yeah. Like that was pretty good.
There's also another gag, too, when they're at some shooting range and Tackleberry, like, all the other, you know, COPs have really small guns and they, you know, and Feldman desperately, doesn't she call him Tack? Doesn't she say, hey, Tack?
Let me squeeze off a round with your giant gun.
Tack. And then Tackleberry, without any hesitation, says, no problem, and gives him his ginormous gun. And you can see the gag a million miles before it actually happens, but the kickback on the gun as she fires it is huge. And doesn't she, like, fly into the back wall and cause a big disaster?
Yeah. There's also, like, a quick shot of the target, too, that she was shooting at. It shoots it, like, right in the dick.
Lassard's officers hear of the jailbreak, all of the cop volunteers are dispatched along with the regular officers to catch the escaped felons. After stopping a robbery and a high-speed air balloon chase.
Man, like, you know, I gave it to them last week on the skidoos and all that. I was like, it's kind of interesting. I've never seen anything like this before. A high speed hot air balloon chase. Are you kidding me?
I know.
And then they're going up in like old like 40s, 50s planes. And
you
stuff.
Know what, man? That all of that stuff would have cost a lot of money as well. Like, it would have been expensive to film, and it would have been expensive to like shoot and make. And oh man, they would have spent a lot of money on that sequence. And you know what? It doesn't really come together.
No, no. Mahoney goes up there with Sharon Stone, who's just like, yeah, I can fly.
Yeah, I know, I know. Which is so random, because they show up to the crime scene and Mahoney's like, oh man, I don't know how what's going to happen. And like, Stone is like, no problem, man. I can take care of this. And next thing you know, they're in this little plane. And it's like, what on earth is happening here? Like, are we in the Twilight Zone at the moment? Is that what's happening? Because that's what it feels like.
The weird thing is, right, because they've got these people doing stunts, walking out on the wings and all that stuff, right? And they don't even try to hide that these people are stunt doubles with parachutes on their back. Because it's like, you know, they crawl out of the plane, they got no parachute on or anything, and then it's a stunt double with a parachute on their back. And I'm like, okay, so not even going to try to hide that they've suddenly got a parachute on.
Yeah, I know.
And they did it over and over again with Mahoney, and then Sweet Chuck and Zed are up there as well. And it was just so obvious that they were swapping them out with these stunt doubles. Just, it kind of annoyed me, really. And then Tackleberry, they did the whole stunt where he sort of jumps on the balloon and then, you know, parallels down the side.
And then doesn't he say when he gets down there, can I please see your license and registration or something like that?
That was probably the best part of it, James Drew, was the Tackleberry part. But the rest of it, I was just like, ugh, this is dumb and not funny. And of course, yeah, Harris and Proctor end up in the river. Yeah.
After Proctor fires off a warning shot and shoots a hole in the balloon.
So Arnie, Kyle, and House show up to rescue them. Yeah, so he's closing the chapter on that. And he's like, yeah, whatever. It was so crappy ending.
Do we see Captain Harris again?
Yes.
We do.
He's still going to come back for the, I think, the rest of the sequels, actually.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to seeing him there. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Yeah. So,
and then, of course, Mahoney flies off in a hot air balloon too. A police academy hot air balloon.
Oh, that's exactly.
Where the and fuck it, you got like, that from?
These films have this weird way of wrapping them up. They literally just stop. The movies finish and they just stop. There's no kind of like, you don't have like 5 minutes catching up with the characters like at the end of the film. Like the chase ends, or they'll have like a speech or something like that. And then the film just rolled to credits and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, yeah. I didn't like this ending at all. The movie had some great stuff. You know, I really like Mrs. Feldman. I like all the stuff with Zed. You know, his love interest and Sweet Chuck was in there. I thought that was great.
I could have done without Lieutenant Hooks.
She did nothing. I forgot about it. I can't believe I forgot about it, but Proctor sets up that in the jail that they had rested a gang of ninjas.
Oh, that's right.
And then
ninjas. And Magatha, Jones and
Callahan and Jones end up fighting the ninjas on a ship. I actually really, really like that. I thought that was funny because they're driving up to the ship there and Callahan just goes, look, there's a ninja now.
And if you look closely at the guy who's playing Nagata, it's clearly a stunt double with a really bad wig. It's just not done very well, but that's okay. It's the 80s.
Scene.
I can accept it.
Yeah, I loved the scene. I thought it was great. So.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
I don't know. I think I still like number one the best. Number three was really, really funny. We had a good time with that. This one's not as bad as number two was. Like, I think we both agreed that two was kind of a low point, but
yeah,
not as good as number three, so...
No, I'm kind of looking forward to number five, though. Not that I'm going to have high hopes for it, but I'm just kind of I'm hoping to kind of get to know a little bit more about some of the other characters that I don't really spend much time with, and especially with all these, you know, Zed and Sweet Chuck and Mahoney kind of going away from the series now. Like, I'm hoping we get to spend a little bit more time with Hightower and Hooks and Jones and Harris and Proctor, and actually maybe get to learn a little bit about them, possibly. But I'm not expecting great things. I'm still expecting gag a minute, but you know, that's okay. They're fun films to watch. And even though we're kind of complaining, like, I didn't have too bad a time watching this film.
Okay, so rating, recommend?
Yeah, I'm kind of quite a middle of the road for this. I'm going to give this 5 Mrs. Feldmans out of 10. It's kind of where it's at. It's not essential viewing. It's not a great film. There's a couple of gags in there, but it's fun. As I said, I didn't hate watching it, so it's all right.
Yeah, and I'm probably there with you. It's fine. You can check this one out. It's not the best one. I'll probably give it 6 Mickey Mouse watches.
6 Mickey Mouse watches. I like it. Yeah. That was actually one of the funniest scenes of the whole film, when he's going, but I've got sentimental value over this. The immeasurable sentimental value of the inexplicable reason as to why Zed became a police officer, because it's never really explained. He just shows up at the start.
He was just reformed for whatever reason.
He just shows up at the start of Police Academy 3, because at the end of Police Academy 2... Is it two, isn't he?
He was the gang leader, and he was going to jail.
That's exactly, he was going to jail, and like, he was a really bad dude. He wasn't just a gang leader, he was like the gang leader. He was like the gang leader that hid like in the underground, guarded by like 50 kind of security guards. It was hilarious.
All right, just a reminder as always that we'd love to hear from you guys. So if you want to send us your feedback, any thoughts on the films we're talking about, we've got them for our feedback section, which we're calling Citizens on Patrol, finally. Enough. So feel free to reach out. We'll be giving you our info at the end of the show. But first, how about another game of Who Said This?
Who Said This?
So give me a cannon.
You ready? 3, 2, 1, scene.
Gene made a machine and Jojo made it go. Art blew a fart and blew the whole damn thing apart.
Even I can't remember who said that. And you didn't give it to me. I might have to get back to you next week about that, if that's all right.
Well, it's a poem. So okay. In what scene were they saying poetry?
Yes. No, probably, yes. I do remember that scene. Well, there you go. All right.
I didn't write it.
Nice. It's very funny.
Yeah. So if you think you know who said that in this movie, just hit us up on our social media feedback. Use the hashtag #rewatchquote and get involved.
Get involved. It's good fun. So next week's episode is going to be Police Academy 5, Assignment Miami Beach. I actually don't recall seeing that. I think back in the day, I probably stopped at the fourth film. I don't remember seeing the last three films.
Well, you know, not to give too much away, but I kind of really like Assignment Miami Beach. I think it's one of the better installments.
So nice.
Get into that next week.
All right. Should be good. That's it for this episode of the Rewatch Podcast. Keep up with listener interaction by joining our Facebook page at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or follow the show on Twitter @rewatchpod and visit our webpage rewatchpodcast.podomatic.com.
And remember, you can always write us an email or record a voice message and send it to the rewatchpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you've enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a rate and review on iTunes. It's always very helpful. And of course, you can help support all the great work we do here at the Rewatch Podcast by heading over to patreon.com/rewatchpodcast, where you can make a monthly contribution as little as $1, and of course it would just help us keep the lights on around here. So very much appreciated. Thank you.
Yes, any contribution is really greatly appreciated.
All right, well, thank you for joining me again, Nathan.
Thank you, mate.
Well, I'll just say, until next time, people don't know who I really am. Now I have to worry about my addiction too.
No, you don't understand, man. It's like a sentimental thing. It was the last thing I stole before joining the Academy.
The Rewatch Podcast is not associated with the copyright holders of these films, and no copyright infringement is intended. The use of any and all copyrighted material is only for parody, news analysis, critique, or educational purposes as provided in Title 17, aka Fair Use. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Copyright 2016, The Rewatch Podcast.
Hi, Rewatch Podcast listeners, I'm Corey.
I'm Tom.
And I'm Nathan.
First off, let me say that we have all had a blast doing the Rewatch Podcast. Every week, we put out another episode for free for you. And although we enjoy these discussions with each other, we truly do this for you guys out there in podcast land.
That's right, Corey. But we are here today to tell you about Patreon. Every week, there are costs involved in podcasting about film and television, including hosting and bandwidth charges, our own personal internet usage, and film or show rentals and purchases. So we're asking you to become a Patreon supporter.
If you can afford as little as $1 to throw our way per month, it would really help us keep the lights on. And if you want to send $100 our way every month, we wouldn't turn that down either. But it's your choice, and we appreciate the support you bring.
As always, we strive to bring you the best quality shows we can create, and we hope that you enjoy them. So head on over to patreon.com/rewatchpodcast to become one of our patrons and show your support for the Rewatch Podcast.
And if we get enough patrons, we may even be able to produce exclusive content just for the supporters in the form of simply getting episodes before the main feed release, or even bonus film discussion episodes as a thank you for your support. The website again is patreon.com/rewatchpodcast.
Thanks, everyone.